Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Retro Rewatch. I say welcome back because this is our first episode into season three of Stargate SG-1. So in a manner of speaking, we are back from the mid-season break. Yeah,
we're back, baby.
We are back, baby. Okay, so that was the gal with the most, Patrice. How are you?
I'm okay. It's not gonna lie. I'm recording this in the summer in Vienna. It is very humid and very hot today. I think I checked. What was it? What did I say? 87. It was like, I mean, this is now like late in the day, and it's still 87 degrees Fahrenheit, 31 degrees Celsius, and like very humid, like 50% up here. So I'm sweaty.
We should just gate somewhere nicer.
Ah, that would be good. Like some nice, cool ice planet would be nice right now. I'll take it.
Right? Yeah. It's, yeah. And I feel your pain. Here in Colorado, it's summer. Mm-hmm. So there's always a major forest fire happening. And
I thought you would say someone is always smoking.
Well, I mean, okay. So yes, that too. For those of you that are like, really? Okay. Boulder, Colorado. and just Google and the rest of it will make sense.
Yes.
So yes. Anyhow, yeah, I've been dealing with days on end of really bad air quality because of high levels of smoke from forest fires.
Very cool.
So I'm ready to gate out with you somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the only thing that might be good for is probably if you had to smoke some brisket, I assume at least. Maybe not.
Sure. Yeah, smoke a nice pork belly or something.
Okay, just hang it outside. Yeah, should be fine.
That's all you have to do right now. It's hot enough, and there's enough smoke. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just be careful.
Oh, by the way, I'm Jeff.
You're Jeff. Yes. Be careful with the bobcats and whatever.
Right. You know the raccoons, those little trash pandas. Mm-hmm. They will ruin everything if you
let
them.
That's true. So maybe not a brisket or whatever. Pork belly. Anyway, it's actually the title of today's episode is also very apropos.
Oh my gosh, it is. Yeah, season 3, episode 1 is Into the Fire.
Yes.
Which is the second half of the cliffhanger from the end of season 2.
Yeah. That we Excuse will me, so henceforth completely forget ever existed.
There's a handful of episodes that I am fine forgetting ever existed.
Yeah, never happened.
Out of Mind is one of them. Mm-hmm. So that makes it an ironic name for that
episode. Oh, that's perfect. Too. That's true. Yeah, it's like that episode is completely out of mind.
Right.
So yeah. Really, we're talking about the first episode of this plotline, really.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You know, in retrospect, maybe once they had everything together for this episode, they thought they should change the title from The Fire Starts, because now we're into the fire. They changed it to something that was a warning for viewers.
Could be.
Out of mind.
Could be. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of still wonder how that happened. It feels like it's one story. If they'd kept it as a single episode, I think it might have been fine. Maybe it was probably one of those cases, but we'll talk about it at the end. Like a little bit too much for one episode, not enough for two, something like that.
Which, that's a thing when you're writing for TV.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about it.
We should. You always have interesting details.
I do, and I have a bunch for them. So the good news is we're back to, let's call it a regular schedule for the air dates. We're not in the weird times where the British Sky One published the episode before the US, before Showtime. We actually paid for it, which was interesting. No, it's June 25th, 1999. This is when this show first aired. So a couple of months, like 3-4 months again, since the last episode. So not that much, which is great. Like people didn't have to wait an entire year for the next episode. I think one of the advantages of 22 episodes. Like, not so much time between seasons at the end.
Which also sucks for the cast and crew, because not so much of a break.
Yes and no. I mean, also, you get paid more, right? Because usually you got paid per episode, so or per shooting day. So more shooting days, more episodes. Oh, fair. These days, I mean, sometimes the episodes are a little bit longer, but it's like you get 8 to 10 episodes usually. So not as much anymore, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah, September 22nd, 1999 in the UK. So even, I mean, this is now flipped. Like, I think it was before like that as well. Like, the UK started a couple of months later, after the summer break, basically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We have an IMDb rating quite high, higher than the previous episode. That shall not be named.
That's no surprise.
No. I was surprised previous episode got better ratings than I would have given it, but 7.9 we get. So, respectable, I would call it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Written by Brad Wright and directed again by Morten Wood. So, like the previous episodes, basically.
They probably shot them together.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, makes sense. That's true. The good news is we have a ton of guest stars this time around. So, you see where they saved money previously and then they could spend it here.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's clear.
Very clear.
And a lot of these guest stars have like real speaking roles and not just a word.
Exactly. So most notably, Tony Amendola is back as Braytak. So yay, Master Braytak is back. Doesn't get too
that makes
much,
me happy.
But a little at least. We of course have Suanne Braun as Hathor back. We have Tom Butler again as Trotsky. We got Colin Cunningham as Major Davis, of course. Samantha Ferris as Mingala or Athena. Gary Jones as Walter Harriman, of course. Like, we know those people. Steve Makash as Robert Makepeace. Colonel Makepeace is again at it. Kaladin Sarita as a lieutenant, Oliver Swenson Tan as Razor, and Alison Thor Grimson as a Jafar woman. And I looked them up to see if they had any notable roles. Most of them have a pretty long career over the last decades now, 20-ish years, in small roles. Like, nothing major, but they're like consistently
they're
showing
working
up.
Actors.
Working actors, not the major flashy ones, no major lead roles. But all of them are showing up all over the map in all of like a lot of shows, which, I mean, you need those people.
Yeah.
Like, you need people that can act, but they're like that fill the roles that you need. And they're versatile enough that they can do all kinds of things, like play an alien this week, play a human next week, like whatever. Play mental ill
the next week. Do sad. After.
Exactly. You need those people because, yeah, there's a lot of different things you have to do. And not everybody can be super successful or super, I should say, famous more. It's not about success. They're successful in their own regards. I mean, they're making money. They're being on TV. They're doing their thing.
Yeah, the majority of successful actors, you don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You might recognize them from time to time.
You do.
They're just the people that are out. Mm-hmm. They might do two shows in a week or, they're just out there picking up those roles that aren't for the big name stars.
Yeah, I mean, most notably, and I'm not blanking actually on his name, what's his name? He shows up as a supporting actor all over big movies. He was in the one of the I think art directors in The Devil Wears Prada. He's in the Hunger Games movies as Caesar. What's his name? I should know him. I like him, but I'm blanking on him.
It's one of those people that
he's well known and he's a really nice guy. I'm just blanking on it. Caesar Flicker.
When you tell me the name, it'll click because you just told me. But
Yeah, I'm just looking it up right now, because that bugs me now that I don't remember what his Stanley Tucci.
Oh, right, Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, I mean, he is famously, like, I don't think he has many leading roles, or maybe none at all, or, like, very rare. I think he also doesn't want to. But he basically plays the supporting actor really well in a ton of shows and movies and whatever. Yeah, so, like,
yeah, you need... Yeah, he even has his own TV show.
Yeah, he does. It's, I mean, that he does. That's one of the...
He's traveling around the world for a TV show.
Which is really... I mean, it's actually really good. Like, also, if you're into the foodie like me, it's a really good show. He also did, like, a lot of, in the pandemic, a lot of home cooking, where he cooked at home. And he's, like, his Italian heritage came into play, whatever. He's a really great guy. At first, I know. I've never met him. But, like I said, he's kind of always the supporting actor. I think he got awards for that. Like, he is very good at being a really good supporting actor. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And clearly he's making a living.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, oh yeah. I mean,
good for him.
Yeah, good for him. So, interesting tidbits. Not a lot in this one, because I'm not a surprise if you look at the story. some of the things we talked about are in the previous episode, basically. So it's not a lot extra about what happened. The German title, not a surprise. I would like to bring it. It's Lion's Den Part 2, Die Höhle des Löwen, Teil 2. So, okay. not very creative, to be honest. It's like Part 2. I mean, at least the American people tried to come up with a good title for it. The Germans were like, Part 2.
It's a very functional title.
It definitely is. The French, I noted it down, and I'm probably going to butcher the French. I had French in school, but I don't know how much of that is left. It's dans l'entre des Gouault, in the Gouault layer. So quite, I would say, spoilery.
Yes, but if you saw Part 1,
yeah,
they're already in the ghouls.
that's true.
It's just obvious.
Yeah, this episode marks the death of Hathor, the second powerful ghoul who is killed by SG-1. You know, Apophis wasn't actually killed. First one, of course, being Ra in the original movies. Or movie. Braytak's ship that is capable of flying through the Stargate eventually gained the unofficial nickname Needle Threader. Based on Braytak's line of dialogue, threading the needle is a skill for the young. In production documents, the ship is identified as Prototype Death Glider.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about that ship, because it looks different from the other small craft we've seen.
Yes.
And so I was thinking, oh, maybe we have a new craft we're going to see more.
Yeah. It's also very interesting that for a race that travels a lot through Stargates, this seems to be the only prototype. It's like hundreds of years old, and they never developed it further, apparently.
Okay, now that you say that, it seems really weird because they designed a ship that fits through a Stargate.
Yeah.
That seems to have a lot of value.
I would say.
Why would you not have a lot of ships that could do that?
Yeah, maybe it was, I mean, threading the needle was maybe so hard and so dangerous that they decided that it wasn't worth it. And they had big spaceships that could travel pretty fast between places, so maybe it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, okay. But it is kind of cool. The idea that you can take a ship and put it through Stargate.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I could see where you could do a lot with that in a storyline.
Yes, I can definitely see that. Yeah, that's it. That's it. No much more. I have one little thing for later, one little notable thing, but not for now.
All right. I have a comment, but I'll save it until we get to that part in the story.
Good. Should we jump in?
All right. We should. So we start off with the teaser
Yeah. Well, we start off with a previously on.
Oh yeah, we get a previously thing. So yeah.
Do you know who voiced it?
I didn't pay attention. Was it Teal'c?
Yeah, it was Christopher Judge. Yes, it was Teal'c.
Okay. The reason I ask what was it Teal'c, Christopher Judge, is because I've noticed there have been other times when they do two-parters.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just be me projecting, but it feels like Christopher Judge does the previously on more often than other people.
I think so, yes. I think he did it, at least so far, I think, either all the time or at least very frequently.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Carter like did it once, but that was also because it was, I think it was the Tok'ra one that was specifically about her.
And so that would make sense then. Yeah. Okay. Here's the irony about the previously on. They condense the episode down and show us everything we need. And it's a better story that way than it was as a full length episode.
Yeah, because I also skipped, I think, all the needless clips.
Which shows you how much of the episode just kind of fell flat.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're at SGC.
Right. And so we have the Tok'ra telling. Wait, no. Am I mixing it up already?
You're the Tok'ra, that does happen, but first, what we get is that Colonel Makepeace basically runs in. And runs right runs through the gate, runs into the control room right away. He needs to find Hammond, really urgently.
Oh, that's right, because he had the message from the Tok'ra.
Exactly.
That's right.
And we get a little funny, tiny little tidbit here, because from the characters, because Hammond is standing, I think, up in his office level. Discussing getting support from, I guess, Congress or someone higher up for three new teams. And he's discussing it with Major Davis, who is, I think, the representative of the Joint Chiefs. And he says, it's a big galaxy out there, Major. Which, yeah, he's right.
He's right. It's a big galaxy.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's right.
Yeah. And then
And that's when Makepeace says, hey, we know where SG-1 is.
Yeah. The Tok'ra told him where SG-1 is. Exactly.
All right. So.
That's it. That's the whole intro.
Oh, that's right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a lot. The previous Leon takes a lot of time and then there's not a lot left, basically. that's why Makepeace had to run, because he had to make sure that they do that in a couple seconds.
Okay, that's really funny. Yes. But it does give us the setup we need for the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. How do they find SG-1 in a plausible way?
Mm-hmm.
And
this is easy. Deus Ex Tok'ra.
There you go. There you go. Oh my God. We should have that on a t-shirt.
Oh, we should. Oh, I like that. Yes, I'll write it down.
Yeah. But it gives us an easy way to hand wave away how they figure out where SG-1 is, and it's the least painful way that they could have done that, because otherwise it's some ridiculous thing where we have the most stupid coincidence to let them find them, and this just works. It's done. It's out of the way. Now we can get on to the episode, and we start off with what looks like a high school Dungeons and Dragons map.
That's so true. They have the blueprints. I actually had a different association when I saw it. I said it looks like Prince of Persia.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that too.
It kind of looks like that as well. It looked like Egyptian, but also kind of, video gamey almost. Yeah, maybe Dungeons and Dragons could also fit. Yes. And they realize it's a mock-up of SGC. So that's interesting.
Right. Right, yep.
Apparently, only light resistance is expected, according to the Tok'ra.
Whatever. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I'd completely forgotten about that bit of Tok'ra intel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So it gives us a setup where we don't have to have an episode where it's like a full-on war.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a tactical strike.
Well, and also they don't have to pay for... Yeah, exactly. They don't have to pay for so many people. I mean, we really only see maybe 10 Gore Wilder Tafa or whatever, maybe.
Right. And we really don't even see the rest of Makepeace's Stargate team.
That's true.
It's like...
Yeah, also there
are a couple people. We get this shot before they go through the gate, and we see part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And
then after we see like 4 or 5 maybe somewhere.
Right. Yeah, there's some extras that stand by the gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of them got a speaking gig.
Yep, there you go. Oh, that's right. Yeah, one of them did get a speaking gig out of that. Yep.
Yeah. And so Hammond wants to call the president. He wants to deploy all available teams. He says. In this case, doesn't mean a lot because half of the teams are foiled. I think Davis points that out.
But still, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Because up to this point, even when we've seen events where they have to have like a serious military presence.
It's like 2 teams or something.
They're sending like 2 teams. They send 8 people.
Yeah. Yeah. But they couldn't afford more for the show.
Right. But just the fact that they're telling us, hey, this is a thing where we want to send multiple teams. We want to have a heavily armed strike force go in there.
Yeah. And Davis does question that. Like, he points out, and I think it's a valid point to make, it is one team. Like, I mean, he asks, like, will you sacrifice or put in danger all your teams or all available teams for one team, for even like 3 out of 4 people on one team? Which Hammond points out, you've got a lot to learn still.
Which I loved the line.
Yeah.
But even if you take out what Hammond just did, to me, it still makes sense to send in a strong extraction team.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, you have 4 core members of the Stargate program that are loaded with intel that you don't want.
Yes.
The Goa'uld to have.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's still a valid question to ask. Like, I mean, it's one of the sad parts, at least that's why, as far as I know and as far as I imagine, one of the sad parts of military life, you have to make a decision, like how much you're willing to risk other people's life in the military for members that might have gotten taken or lost or whatever. Like, it's always a risk if you're sending them. I mean, you might lose more of them, and you have to be either okay with that or you don't do it.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more important what Hammond does next.
Yes. And I like the way they did this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, as he's giving his speech, I was pretty sure what was going to happen next, and I was right. Yeah,
of course. I mean, that's a trope in TV or in TV. In
of course,
like,
it is.
Like, oh, the super risky, dangerous, everybody might die. Project? No, I'm blanking.
Mission.
Mission is the right word I was looking for. Project. I can't order you to do this. And then everybody steps forward and volunteers, basically.
That's exactly how it plays out.
Yeah.
I
don't know, but I would assume in real life probably also happened like that.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
All the teams that they send, because there's like 5 teams that go through, I think.
4.
4. Okay.
I noted down the number.
Go through.
Yes. You also mentioned.
Well, they said the numbers.
Yeah.
3, 5, 6, 7. Three of them are prime numbers and one of them isn't.
Interesting.
That's what stood out to me.
Nerd.
I couldn't remember the numbers. I'm just like, oh, yeah. One of them isn't a prime.
3, 5, 6, and 11. Those are heading in.
And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how when they go back to the fake, the mock set.
Yeah.
They show the thing that I saw in the last episode that stood out to me. Mm-hmm. The light on the wall in the embarkation room is round instead of square.
Yes. Tiny difference, tiny thing. I mean, also super easy to switch out on the set. You're just switching out a light, light shade, like a lamp, and then it looks different. Yeah, I like that. This transition, like very subtle. It's like it's basically the same shot, and then it just transitions from the real to the fake one. As you said, like the light changes. That's the biggest difference, basically.
Yep. And then it pans out to the rest of the room, which you see is the same. And not like we didn't know already that it was a mock-up, because we've been told many times, and we saw the Prince of Persia map, all of that.
That's true.
but they still gave a nice visual for, and now you're in the fake Stargate.
Yes. Exactly. And then we get the fake looking Goa'uld lover with Hathor. So we're back at where we were at the end of last episode, basically.
Right. And the Goa'uld looked
super fake.
Wonderfully fake. It looked Babylon 5 level fake.
No. Babylon.
Oh, they would have used a practical.
They would have done a practical effect, which I mean they did before and also looked pretty bad. So
they should have
Babylon 5 would have just stuck. Yeah, exactly. Babylon 5 probably would have just stuck with the practical effect because they didn't have the money for anything else.
Yeah. So okay. So here's one of the problems I have with the CG Gould. They give it glowing red eyes that are obviously
just super
fake.
Yeah. I mean it's. I'm not even sure it was meant to look real. I don't know if they even tried. It just looked like a video game cartoon Goa'uld, basically. It looked like a drawing of a Goa'uld almost.
Maybe it played better on lower resolution TVs that of the 1990s.
Possible. Yeah, that's possible. It's kind of like what was the movie, the was it Space Jam with like the cartoon characters in real world? It's kind of like what it looked like.
Oh yeah, yeah, and with a little bit of Who Framed Roger Rabbit through.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's fine. Like if you know that, but as I said, I don't know if they even tried to make it look real or they just want. I mean, from a practical perspective, it's probably easier to do that in CG because you can do all the movements and whatever easier. Even in the 90s, late 90s, probably easier than doing it practically. It just looked really fake.
Yeah, it did. And but it picks its new host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I also love what was her name? Suzanne Braun. Her really evil way of like how she goes to, like she goes to Daniel, says, oh, should it pick my beloved and we're gonna have fun together, and then it goes to Carter and the girl kind of recalls and she's like, oh, you've basically already had a symbiote, but maybe you should pick you, and then it goes to Jack, and of course it's Jack.
Of course it's Jack.
Of course it's Jack. And the girl kind of pretends it likes it, and it's like it picks Jack, and then we get like a surprise, and I don't know, I didn't see this coming.
I didn't see this coming, but I predicted something like this would happen. Mm-hmm. I'm just calling that right now.
Yes.
Yeah, we get the thing that that happens that prevents them from putting the Gould into Jack.
Well, for now, you didn't get it exactly right, because at the end of the day, the Goa'uld was put into the neck. I mean, it didn't take.
Okay, but that was true.
Lucky. That was lucky, but or not lucky. That was planned. But yeah, this situation, I mean, we were all expecting, okay, now it's like Jack basically is, oh, like, but please, like, don't go through the back of the neck because it leaves a mark and whatever. And I think then we get a Zed hit. Jack and Jack Jr., I call it Jack Jr. here, get hit by a Zed hit.
Oh my god, that's fantastic.
From a scientist. From, what was her name? I blanked.
I don't remember her name.
The turns out to be Tok'ra scientist.
Right. And now, we already had a setup that there were Tok'ra in the base because of the whole thing with Colonel Makepeace.
Yeah, yeah. They have a source on site. So, yeah, we know that. Yeah, but I said that was surprised and really well played also on Jack's part. Like, he falls down and he's kind of not moving on the ground. He's kind of in pain a little bit. Like, he's like, he got hit by a Zed.
It doesn't feel good.
Apparently not. Yeah. The Goa'uld also seems to not like it. Neither of them were armed, but yeah. We go really quick outside. Get like, you probably forgot about that because it's not super. It's basically the teams are, they've arrived on the planet and they're now rushing towards the facility.
Oh, right. Okay. So I had forgotten this is where that happens. Mm-hmm. In my mind, when we have the longer scene with the SG teams, I thought that was all happening like in the one scene. But okay, yep, now I remember.
Yep.
We get the clip and then the rest of it later.
Yeah, and then we go to Tula.
Oh, right, because so the second or the multiple SG teams, I'm calling that B and a half.
B and a half. Yes.
And then Teal'c has the B story going.
The B story. Yeah. And I mean, we knew that, I mean, Teal'c left at the end of last episode, right? So we know that he will show up some way unless they canceled him and he's not coming back. Which would be a surprise.
But So we knew we were going to see Teal'c.
Mm-hmm.
And
we know he sent out to find allies or people that he can get to help SG-1.
Right. So he ends up in like a compound or
Tulak City, I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. he gets on down into Tulak Town.
Yeah. And it's funny.
Yeah, and so he goes into one of the I don't know, a town hall or something, and
I see that part I wasn't sure. I kind of was assuming almost that it's Braytek's house because later on he says that's where he wants everybody to assemble. So maybe it was Braytek's. I don't know. It was very not clear who. I thought it was his wife's house actually originally. Because I was not sure at all, like, whose place that is. And he finds Braytek, so that's the point.
Right. Yeah, the place is all trashed, and he finds Braytek on the floor, but alive.
Yeah, but very, very injured.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he asks Braytek, you know, what's going on here? Who did this? And it was what was left of Apophis's Jaffa guards.
He said, the last of Apophis's guard. That's what he said. And it's really interesting, this whole scene, because it shows so much that life is not as easy. Because he says, like, he hoped that they would celebrate. Or people are not as easy. Like, he hoped that they would celebrate. I mean, Apophis is gone. Like, they're free, basically-ish. They should be free. Instead what happened is that they feared Chlorel would return. They're afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, which means they're not Teal'c's free.
And then Teal'c's like, okay, well, I want to raise an army, so let's do that.
Yeah, he's like, I will have to reach them somehow. I need to raise an army. It's not, he want to, I need to raise an army.
Yeah. Right. So, that's when we go back to, to Jack, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. We go to the lab.
And this is where, yeah. And so Jack, he's had the snake stuck in his neck.
At
the beginning of the scene.
Not yet.
Oh, it happened?
Not yet. It happens in the scene. So he's in the stasis tube again. Hathor is there, and she, you know, she's the typical Gwoll thing. She's gloating. She's like, oh, once the Gwoll is taken over, you will kill Sam and Daniel, who are standing there as well. And then she puts the Gwoll on Jack's chest almost, and it enters, and it enters through the neck, because that's the kind of assholes there.
Because that's kind of assholes there.
Yeah.
But Hathor, there's part of her line that I really like,
mm-hmm.
and it's where she tells Jack that he will be a witness. He will watch the murder of his friends and colleagues and not be able to do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, as I said, she's being like very gleefully being like evil. And then all of a sudden there's an attack and Hathor rushes out.
Right. But the snake Jack Jr. Is in him. So the attack, we assume this is the Stargate team breaching. But or at least that's what I was assuming.
Time. You assumed exactly, and then like a minute later or whatever we got that confirmation. But yeah, Hathor rushes out. I think a lot of people rush out. Who stays back is the scientist, and I said I don't remember her name now, but she stays back and she reveals that she's actually Tok'ra, and she tells Jack.
So now since we can't remember her name, she's now Madame Tok'ra.
Madame Tok'ra. Okay, Madame Tok'ra. Good. And she tells Jack to fight it. I mean, I could probably just scroll up and I would be able to say, I think it's Thena or Mingala. Like Samantha Ferris, I think that's the actress. Yeah, but let's call her Madame Tok'ra. She basically tells Jack, I'll put you back in stasis, but you will have to fight the Gwoll until then. Like, it will die, but you have to fight it until, like, you're basically in stasis and whatever, and it dies, because if you give up, then it takes over.
Right. So down he goes.
Mm-hmm. Not quite, actually. We see nothing. Like she we switch away because we go to the firefight, which is not super important. We see the SG teams. And Dag and Daniel and Sam get freed. I think that's the important part here.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. She freed them. Mm-hmm. Tells Jack, I have to popsicle you.
No. The Tok'ra didn't. The Hathor's guards had taken them away. But in the hallway, one of the SG teams shot the guards, basically, and Sam and Daniel were freed that way.
All right. So at this point, it's very clear. I wasn't doing great at getting into this episode.
Okay.
Because I remember the stuff, but it is just munched together so much more than usual.
Is that more than usual, or is that just the usual amount?
I to me, it feels like more than usual.
Okay. I'll go with you then and say it's more than usual.
Yeah. And to be fair, I was having some trouble like really getting into this episode.
Yeah, it's not a great episode. I'm with you. We'll talk about that at the end. Yeah. And then we go back to the lab, and I think that's just the one that you remember, because Jack gets put in the tank. So the thing goes down again into the
right. And then cooler. And then Hathor shows up.
And Hathor shows up, surprise. And she calls the scientist Jaffa. I guess she was a Jaffa or pretended to be a Jaffa, but she says, I'm not a Jaffa, I'm Tok'ra. And then Hathor uses her hand device to throw her against the wall. As, you know, Gwoll do.
As one does. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Then we go back
also to the hall. Like so many Gwoll fails to follow through and make sure that they had completed their task.
For them, it doesn't matter. They're beneath them and they can kill them anytime. So it just doesn't matter.
So, but here's another problem with this.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm assuming that Hathor knows that Jack was just dunked and popsicled.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it depends on when she came in. I mean, it's not clear.
Okay. Well, here's another issue then. With this is a Jeff problem.
This is a Jeff problem.
Because
could also be on a t-shirt. This is a Jeff problem.
That could be on a t-shirt. Yep. The way that scene played out, I thought that she saw the tank, and that's why she was saying, "What have you done?"
But in retrospect,
it could be. Did she let everyone else go?
Yeah, I mean, she might not know that Jack is. I mean, she maybe suspects something or knows something, but you might not know that it's Jack. Like, who knows? Or she doesn't know that what it will do to the Quovel. Like, and who knows? Like, it's, yeah, of course. I agree. It's kind of bad writing for me.
So,
yeah, let's just move
on. So, assuming, well, yeah. Just real quick and then I'll move on. I know I'm stuck on this and I shouldn't be. If she knew that Jack had been popsicled, why didn't she just hit the button to lift the thing back out?
Maybe it's too late. Maybe, I mean, to be fair, there's a whole firefight going on. So maybe she had other bigger fish to fry. Yeah. I mean, she can always put another Goa'uld in him. Like, it's not that it matters. I mean, you know, Goa'uld are not very important either. Like, I mean, they like, have entire cases of them sometimes.
That's so true. And these people are just jerks. So.
Exactly. So she's probably like, eh, whatever. We'll just put another one in. Like, eh.
Okay. I'll try and let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, as I said, not great writing. So we go back to the hallway.
Yeah. And now we get more of the firefight.
More firefight. And we hear that they've lost contact with the team at the gate, which is not good.
No. But we also end up with something...
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if it's right here or if it's the next time we cut back to the Stargate teams.
Yeah.
Somehow they've magically found actual Stargate uniforms for Sam and Daniel.
I didn't even remember that. Yeah, could be. Maybe they brought them. I don't know. Yeah.
Because ultimately the only person from SG-1 that's not in an actual...
Yeah.
Legit Stargate uniform is Jack.
I mean, maybe they found, I mean, they were, maybe they found their uniforms. I mean, who knows? Maybe they were just lying around.
It's just one of those things. From
yeah, don't pay attention to it.
And they magically have new clothes.
Yes, exactly. Not super important. More important is that they argue and they decide that they're going to leave Jack behind, which Sam is not very happy about. Daniel is Daniel, but I think tactically it's probably not a bad idea to say, okay, I mean, we know that we came here to free them, but if they're cut off from the Stargate,
Jack already has a Goa'uld in him.
And that's true. Yeah, I mean, they don't know what happened with thing. So it's probably a lost battle.
Well, I thought Sam told Makepeace that Jack had a Goa'uld in
him. Yeah. But they don't know Goa'uld, that the Tok'ra kind of killed the Goa'uld. They don't know that.
Right. Okay. Yep. That's true.
Yeah. So I think it's a tough choice, but I think it's the same choice to say, okay, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's not.
Yep. It's the right move.
It's probably the right move. I mean, as I said, Sam is not very happy about it and she doesn't really want to, but I think ultimately also, yeah, they go back. But we go back to Tudluk first.
Right. And we get something that we, to date, really haven't seen much of, which is a legit Teal'c monologue.
Teal'c monologue and also a Teal'c leader.
Yes.
So far, I mean, he stood up. I mean, let's remember what he did. I mean, he stood up to Apophis originally in the pilot. He's for sure fought his fair share of battles with SG-1 together and like stood trial and stuff, whatever. He's been back to Tudluk a couple of times. But I wouldn't say we've seen a leadership moment from him so far. despite
and
the fact
now that,
that
you say that, that's really interesting because he was Apophis's prime. So that's a very powerful leader position.
Maybe it is, or maybe it's not. I mean, how much of a leader, really a leader, was he allowed to be as his first prime? Because, you know, golds are gods, right?
Yeah, so that's true.
They make all the decisions. So maybe he really...
I guess I'm projecting because Braytac is clearly a very strong leader.
Yeah.
And he was prime before Teal.
That is true. And I mean, I would agree with you that I suspect that Teal also had that in him. I mean, he was, after all, like Braytac trained him. So I would assume that Braytac made sure. But we haven't seen him step up to that yet. I think he was too busy fighting on the outside and helping SG1 to this point. Despite the fact, and it's what I wanted to say, that he, from the get-go, basically said his goal is to free his people.
Yeah.
And this is the first time he shows that. Really shows it. Because he goes to the town square. And he starts arguing with other Jaffa who are not with him. Who are not. I mean, they call him still traitor. They want to fight him. They want to kill him. Whatever. They still see him as the enemy almost. But they also... Mm-hmm. He understands that they're doing that because they're afraid. They're not doing it because they hate him. They're doing it because they're afraid.
And I really do like, like you brought it up earlier. I like that instead of having the obvious, we're Jaffa, but we're free Jaffa. And so we're just, now we're just warriors battling the Goa'uld. But instead, we get to see these strong, brave, powerful people actually afraid that they're going to be subjugated again.
Yeah. And Teal'c, and I copied it out of the transcript. He says, the important part he says is, with or without, with you or without, he, and he means Clovel, will be defeated, as was his father. Our people will taste freedom. You may tell your kinsmen that Teal'c's returned to Chulak. You will go to every home of every warrior in the city, and you will tell them that I will speak at the house of Braytac at dawn. Summon them. So he puts word out.
Mm-hmm. And he's not afraid to put it out publicly.
That, and he doesn't ask them. He says, you will go. You will tell it. You will go to every house. He's not asking them, hey, can you please let other people know? He's like, you will tell them, and you will tell them that I will speak at the house.
I like Boss Teal'c.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's for the first time he's showing up as a like a leader for the Jaffa, for the free Jaffa, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We go back because now we're waiting for dawn, right, on Chulak, so we can go back to SG1. SG teams.
Where it's clearly the middle of the day.
I mean, it's different planets have different cycles.
Right.
It's not the same.
Right.
Yeah.
So it works out just fine. Different time zones.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're heading off
to the Stargate.
They need to get back to the Stargate. There we go. Wow.
Yeah, they're in the woods and they're basically at the they're looking at the quarry that we've seen so many times before. There's another Stargate, and they're like, "Where's the SG team or the enemy?" It's like it's empty. There's nobody. No SG team. No Jaffa. Just nobody. Which is sounds like a trap.
It sure sounds like a trap to me.
Yeah, and then, I mean, they are like, okay, what should we do? I mean, I guess we're going to go down and see what happens.
Well, I mean, at some point, they have to approach the Stargate.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just a I matter mean,
they
of when and how.
They can't also wait forever, because then, for sure, someone will show up. So,
right.
Yeah.
And but this is where they find out that that the Goa'uld have... I don't know. What would you call it? A plaid force field?
Yeah.
It looks sense. Different from any,
yeah.
And I'm doing air quotes, force field we've seen before.
Yeah. Pretty big, massive force field around their facility. And they're still on the inside, right? So this is actually, force fields work in both directions. Nothing goes in, nothing goes out. So they're on the inside of the force field right now. But they can't get to the Stargate, which is outside.
And this is a problem. And then bad guy general...
Trotsky?
Thank you, Trotsky.
Yeah.
He shows up with a couple of his guards.
Yeah.
And
they have weapons towers. Really funny. Like the weapons towers pop up out of the ground.
Yeah. I saw those and I had conflicting reactions.
Okay.
Part of me was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And the other part was, okay, having gun turrets that you can just pop up out of the ground is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of helpful. You don't see them until they pop out. I mean, practically, I'm like, how does that work? But okay.
Right, especially because there's already guys sitting in them.
Yeah, exactly.
So do they just hide in the ground?
Underground?
Or is there like an under a tunnel network? Or?
Yeah, probably something like that. It is really, or they get beamed in. I don't know. It's a bit weird.
Yeah, but... it's wonderfully convenient for the story because it does raise the stakes.
It does massively raise the stakes. So they get like they're under attack and they're running back and some people I think get killed because of course they're firing. So they run back to like the forest basically to hide. Conveniently, one of them shoots into the ground and there's a tunnel.
Huh.
Very Tok'ra-looking tunnel. Huh, very convenient.
That's wonderfully convenient.
Yeah, Deus Ex Tok'ra, once again.
Yep. That we really need that on a shirt.
Yes, we do. So they go into the tunnel, and they're like, maybe we can go under the barrier.
Which, at this point, now we've got the MacGuffin hole.
Mm-hmm.
So using that to go underneath the barrier does seem like a reasonable step at this time.
Yeah. So, and we get a little scene with Trotsky. I think he sees also the tunnel and Dux Tok'ra. And I think he calls Hathor. And Hathor says, I want the humans alive because I want to use them as hosts. I mean, she does need soldiers, right? So...
Sure, and these people are already soldiers, so
put the gold
all they
in
need is they need a warm upgrade and they're set.
True. Yeah, but turns out the barrier actually extends underground because, physics.
Well, okay, Patrice, we're watching a show where people step through a big metal ring.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Appear in other parts of the galaxy.
That's true. Okay, you're right. So of course, like energy fields like that can also extend underground without really doing anything to the ground. Yeah, totally fine.
Right. And we can also have turrets that magically spring up from the ground with people already in them.
Yeah. Yeah. But that gives Sam an idea.
Oh, right. Because she's like, wow, that must use a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. A lot of power. So there must be a pretty big generator somewhere here. If we can shut that down, then that would be good.
The barrier falls.
Yeah. We go to SGC really quick. Don't remember. Hammond is waiting. The teams are 5 hours overdue. So he finally decides that he should call in.
Yeah, that's waiting that long in a situation like this seems kind of weird, but whatever.
I don't know. I mean, he probably doesn't know like what's going on and whether it's successful or not. And he probably gives them a little bit of leeway and says, okay, maybe, you also don't want to call in the middle of a firefight and distract them. So maybe he's like, maybe the fight is going a little bit longer than we thought. Like, maybe we should.
Yeah, it could be.
We could wait. And then after 5 hours, he's like, okay, now it's too much. Who knows?
So, but
maybe 5 hours.
Regardless.
his inner self set deadline.
Could be. And, or maybe that was their pre-established cutoff point.
Yeah, could also.
But anyhow.
Anyway, but they call.
They, yeah, but they end up opening the gate and General Zod's people. Well, great. Now I'm just renaming everyone.
General Zod.
They're like, okay. Uh-oh, the gate's going to open. So they all step away so they don't get kawooshed.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So Hammond talks to the SG teams and they do a sit rep. And then Hammond says, okay, I'll send reinforcements in 6 hours through the gate. Which makes sense. I mean, kill the people at the gate. I mean, you can attack them now from at least one direction because the others... I mean, from two directions if you can, like, disable the shield.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Not bad.
And so now Hammond has enough intel where he decides he's committed. He wants to take this place. So he wants to send in, like, a whole platoon.
Yeah, armored platoon is what he calls it. But Davis disagrees. And apparently he already talked to the president and Joint Chiefs about that. And the request was already denied. Which makes Hammond not so happy.
No, he's not happy at all. No.
Yeah.
And but
again, I also get a little bit the point of the president Joint Chiefs. I mean, they're looking at it from a big distance, right? It's not their teams. They don't know the people, not very much at least. They've heard of them and they've met them probably at this point. But I mean, they've saved freaking Earth after all. So,
right. Yeah, General Hammond, he's playing a war game.
Yeah.
And the people in Washington are playing an Excel game.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like you look at it from the distance and you're like, okay, how many people do you want to send? Like, how much is too much, right? Do you send all your army, like everybody? Like, what's next? So I mean, you can agree or disagree with that decision, but you have to understand that's a different perspective to say, like, how many people are we willing to sacrifice?
Right, but regardless, they have found another way in the story to up the stakes for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Sam says, okay, I'll go back and shut down the generator. So they will once again split up, which is a typical SG-1 trope, right? Let's split up.
Right.
Have an A, B, C, D, E, F story in this case.
Right. Oh, this is the alphabet episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
So Jaffa have, in the meantime, made it into the tunnel. So part of the team will basically try to fight them and Sam will go back and try to disable the Jenny.
Right. And so now we get the rest of Teal'c's a big monologue.
Yeah.
And so we're back at Braytak's house.
Yes.
And
Braytak is looking better, which is great.
Yep. Hooray for his little junior.
Mm-hmm. Not so junior, probably junior.
Right. Yeah. And he gives Teal'c Braytak makes a great MC.
Because he does.
He does a great job warming up the crowd and giving Teal'c an intro.
Yeah.
And
says, I never wrote it down. He says, Teal'c has returned from the Tauri. If you care for this world and for our people, you will listen to what he has to say. And I mean,
scene.
Right.
Oh, he does. Yeah. But this whole scene with the set and they come in on the balcony and then it has the wraparound staircase to come down.
We've seen this before, the set, by the way. It's not the first time.
We have.
Yeah.
But as I was watching this scene, I'm like, oh, it's the Shakespeare scene.
To be or not to be. No. That kind of is the question.
But he does his monologue starts happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it if you want.
Comes around on the stairs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically the gist of it is what Teal'c says is the Goa'uld are not gods. It's a lie we live each day. Only when he takes a host does a Goa'uld become strong. Even then, only as strong as the Jaffa who serve him. Without us, the Goa'uld are nothing. We are their strength, we are their power, until we choose to serve them no more. I was witness to the final breath of Apophis, by the way, wrong. Well, no, he actually wrong, he didn't see it, because he was in the gate room. I watched him tremble with fear for what lay beyond. I believe that day would be honored for all time on Chulak. But instead, I see Jafar taking up arms against one another. I see cowardice, and I am ashamed. This is our time. It will not come again. But first, we must grow stronger, as the people of the Tauri have done back in Egyptian times. I call for warriors to join me through the Jaffa Eye, to gather weapons, to forge alliances with other Jaffa who seek freedom, to show the Go'uld we will do battle with them wherever they may be. Who will join me? Great speech. Falls flat.
Yep. So, all right. I just have to call it right now. One of my predictions was a larger Jaffa alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And Teal'c just set it up for us.
Yeah. And it's not happening. At least not now.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not
Will it happen in the future? Who knows? I mean, like he's putting the pieces in place, but it's not happening right now because most people leave. There's a couple remain, but most people just leave.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a couple Jaffa and some people in hooded robes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that turns out to be General Hammond.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, what it shows you is you can have the best speech in the world. If the audience is not willing to hear it, it will simply fall flat.
Right. And yes. And in this case, it turns out that was a really clever writing maneuver because they could have done the trope and everyone takes one step forward and now they're on board.
Yes.
But in this case, most of the people were like, yeah, peace out, bro. And they were gone.
And a couple remained. And one of them, as you said, turns out to be General Hammond. He like removes his hood and he says, not what I'd call an army, but it's a start.
Right.
A couple people. Yeah, but it's better than nothing. I mean, he has more than he had 10 minutes, 15 minutes before.
That's true. And excuse me, even though I said, hey, I called it, and you pointed out, well, yeah, not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately I have called it. I really think this is the beginning of the setup for a storyline for Jaffa Alliance. It has that feel to me.
Maybe, maybe not.
We will see.
We'll see where this goes. But it's definitely not happening in this episode. I mean, we've seen it.
Well,
so you know.
Okay. Yes, that's true.
Yeah. We go back to the
facility. I guess it's not a win yet.
Not yet, but it's
tipping in my favor.
It's a start. Yeah. Could go that way. We go back to the facility. And Carter finds. Oh, here I have the name Raleigh. So that's the.
I think Tok'ra. Madame Tok'ra sounds
Madame
better.
Tok'ra. She explains how she saved Jack. She's hurt, but she seems to be okay. And Hathor shows up again.
Right, because apparently she has a short attention span and like, can't be involved in her. Yeah,
girl, I should go back to the lab. Yeah. We get. Brief thing where they're still fighting with the Jaffa in the tunnels. I don't know. It's just filler. And then Hathor starts torturing Carter, like, you know, with the hand device thingy. Like they do.
Oh, right. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, and I think Jack had been, Carter, like Raleigh had told Carter that he had to touch some button or some. Something console.
This is somehow they
and Jack
they would pulled his pod out.
Pulled the pod out and it opened and whatever and a surprise and I didn't see that coming. Jack basically shows up and throws her into the cryo pond. So Hathor.
Okay, so this is where I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much potential here,
mm-hmm.
up to this point, for a really interesting Gould leadership alliance storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not with Hathor. Sorry, not
she could be part of it.
No, not with her. No, she. I mean, well, she's been from day one when we met her. Like, remember back in, was it season one even? When we met her originally, when she basically took over the base.
She wants it all.
Yeah, she. I mean, she is the mother of all Goa'uld, so she says. And she just wants it all. She just wants it to control it all. I mean, to the point that what we saw is like she's been amassing supporters from all over System Lord space. Her goal is to take it all. She wants to kill all the other Goa'uld or subs, like whatever, subject them or whatever. Like basically, she wants to be in control. So no, like there's no. I don't think there was a chance at all that she would. Okay, she might agree to it, but you. Basically can't work with her. I mean, you can barely work with any Goa'uld, but I think you can definitely not work with her.
All right. So you're right. But since I'm spitballing a whole okay. season here,
yeah.
What if she continued to do exactly what she's doing and she starts to become too powerful in the eyes of the other warlords?
Mm-hmm.
System Lords, and that's where the Alliance comes from. All of these other Goa'uld who need to band together to stop Hathor. And so now we have this Goa'uld civil war,
and
they're having to fight the Tari at the same time, and here come the Jaffa army. And
But from Carter's, especially, and from SGC's perspective, her dying is the best outcome. It's one less dangerous, and I mean, she's dangerous on multiple levels. She's dangerous for the Tok'ra as well, by the way, because she's unpredictable. Right? The others, or I'm assuming most of the other System Lords are to some degree predictable in the unpredictability sometimes, maybe even. Because
you're right, she's very different.
Because they have their realms and their Jaffa and their people that worship them, and they might fight wars and kill people to get more territory. But you know, they're men. That's like every war on planet Earth, right? It's like it's kind of predictable.
Mm-hmm.
But she is a wild card. She has no followers. She has no realm. She's like nothing.
She's the Ronin Goa'uld.
Yeah, and she wants it all.
Yeah.
The others are saying, this is why
I wish she wasn't killed.
No, I'm happy that she was killed. I mean, I wanted to see the actress again because it's quite a fun character, but I'm happy she was killed. Or was she? I mean, we don't know whether she was actually killed, right? Because, I mean, she gets thrown in a pond. We don't know. I mean, we've seen Goa'uld come back from the dead, in air quotes.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
However, I'm feeling like she's just dead.
Yeah, we'll see. And we'll see. I mean, we'll have to watch the rest of the 10 seasons to see that, but I would assume so at this point as well. Maybe not.
So we have found a rare point where we have clearly opposing views on something that happened.
Yes, but let's move on.
Yeah,
let's move on.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. So, I think Carter asks Jack if he's himself, because I mean, you know, a Goa'uld could have killed another Goa'uld. You know, for the sake
of we've seen it before.
Yeah, but he says, "Yeah, I'm cold, I'm a little chilly, very Jack, but I'm me." He says. So yeah, it works.
Right.
And turns out also the Tok'ra might survive, and they now have to go shut down the shield.
So now we have all of our team members back in play, and Jack doesn't have a live Goa'uld in him anymore.
Yeah. So we go to Chulak, and we go to the forest, another forest in Chulak that looks exactly like all the other forests, because of course BC Forest.
Right. It's, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to keep track of what planet they're on because they have a limited number of locations and sets they can use. And you start recognizing the trees.
So true.
And, but
either way, I mean, we've seen this forest before because we have been in the forest on Tulak, so it's not a surprise. Braytag, Tilak, and Hammond are looking for a ship that Braytag left hidden. And he says, oh, yeah, like 100 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And there's one thing I wanted to mention here. So we talked already about the Needle Threader Death Glider, but Braytag uses a slightly curved, almost sword or like a machete type of thing.
Okay.
This is an exact copy of an ancient Greek Kopsis sword favored by the cavalry around 2,500 years ago. Someone figured that out. I didn't. I just read.
Huh. I didn't even notice what he was chopping with.
I am such a
horrible Stargate fan.
No, you're not. No, you're not. And that's where we get to what we talked about, that Tilak will threat the needle, basically. Because it's for the young. And Tilak is definitely way younger than... He's probably pretty old-ish. You know,
yeah.
Stefan. Because, I mean, they live a long time. But he's definitely way younger than Braytag. He gets to threat the needle.
So,
we go back.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
We go back to the facility. And they finally found the generator. I think they wandered into the Stargate room, the fake Stargate room, and they're like, it is a pretty big room. Maybe it's here? And Jack sees he sees like a lever on the, and is like, sure, pull this. Jack's like, go ahead. And he pulls it. And it's like, I think the doors open something. And like, big
the wall dolls. Opens up. And
It's like, oh, there's the generator. And then my favorite thing, when in doubt, C4.
Because they always have C4.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And this is a good place to use that C4.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Unfortunately, too late for SGC. For the other SG teams because they've been captured.
Right. Yep. But Sam and Jack don't know.
Yeah. So they go.
They're busy playing with their C4.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they place the C4 and then they go to the forest and go towards the Stargate. I mean, back, right? And they see the captured teams in front of the Stargate, right? There's Trotsky, there's all the Jaffa. And Trotsky basically wants them to surrender. He's like, it's over. Like, we got everything under control. We got your teams. This is it. And I mean, Trotsky, like, he knows they're probably out there somewhere now.
Right. Yeah. So he's just shouting to the air.
Yeah. Assuming
that he knows they hear him.
Yeah. And Jack is like, hey, they think I'm a Goa'uld, right? So he's like, okay, Sam, wait until the SGC gals in and then blow the C4. And I'm going to pretend I'm a Goa'uld and see what I can do. Like, stall them, basically. I think all he wants is to stall them.
And he just comes strutting up as Jack, being Jack.
Jack, and it's not very convincing at all. And yeah, it turns out that didn't work at all. He's not very good at pretending to be a Goa'uld. So he goes to his second favorite thing. He's like, okay, he's just going to keep talking. Like, okay, it's very clear he's not a Goa'uld. But he's like, well, Hathor is dead. I killed her.
So they don't believe him.
Of course they don't believe him. But that was apparently just enough time for the Stargate to dial. And we see Hammond and Tilak fly through. And Carter sees that and blows the generator. And we get a little action scene. Basically, Hammond and Tilak are... I think Tilak is flying and Hammond is shooting.
Yes.
And they kill the first tower, so it's down. The shield, of course, is gone because there's no energy. And then the rest of the crews come through the gate. So there's more, like, you know, the Jaffa are coming through now.
Right.
And Teal'c, you know, Hammond kills the second tower. And we get a rare Hammond having fun scene. You know, he usually is pretty reserved. I mean, friendly and nice, but reserved and like
controlled.
And he's like, yeehaw.
He's having fun. The yeehaw by itself, it's like,
yeah.
Okay, that was silly.
Yeah.
But Christopher Judge does this kind of side eye thing looking like, back because Hammond's behind him.
Yeah.
And that's what sells the scene and makes it really funny. Yeah.
No, I thought it was funny on its own. I mean, I saw the Teal'c thing, but I just thought it was funny that Hammond was having so much fun flying in the thing and shooting and like whatever, which I can see. I mean, he's I think the Air Force, so flying is probably a thing that he likes.
And he's a general, so it's probably been a long time since he's been able to do anything like this.
Yeah, at least in any military capacity. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's flying privately. But yeah, but he's like, okay, so he's having fun, and then the deck. Yeah, Christopher Judge solves it with like this lock. It's like, okay, didn't expect it.
it was fantastic.
Yeah. And with that, the Jaffa surrender at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Because
And now everyone's happy.
Yeah.
The Stargate teams won.
Yeah.
In the end.
Teal'c and Hammond join them. You see the ship hovering in the background a little bit, which was a nice effect. You see it like hover there.
that was a nice effect. Yep. Yeah.
And you see Hammond smile. So it was apparently a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, clearly,
he
just got to ride in a little ship that flew through a Stargate.
Yeah, needle threader. And it was pretty quick.
And then blow up some towers.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, so, and that's the end.
And this episode is clearly better than the first half of the cliffhanger.
Yeah, not the bar is set low. No, the very low bar.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, I had issues with this episode.
Me too.
So much so that I really had a difficult time getting into it.
Me too. None of it.
But at least it was.
Yeah.
At least it was better than the first half.
It was better, but I think what it has in common with the first episode is it didn't feel really like anything. There were any stakes.
Right. Yeah. I felt like every stake that was added in to hype the severity of the situation, the danger.
Yeah.
They didn't sell it.
No. It's like, oh, Jack is a Gorgon now, but you don't believe it, not for a second.
Like, right.
You know, immediately it's basically. I mean, it's 10 seconds after it gets resolved, basically. It's like oh, there's a big energy barrier. We can't go there. But we're just going to blow up the generator. It's like, okay.
Right. So let's just go into the Stargate room and say, hey, what about this lever? And we found it.
Yeah. It's like, everything kind of gets resolved pretty quickly all the time. It's like,
I think they're trying to do too much.
Yeah. Hathor is dangerous and she's going to kill Carter. Oh no. Jack just throws her in the thing. Like,
right.
It's just all of that. It's like none of it feels like there's a lot at stake. And I mean, we know, of course, that somehow it gets resolved and there's some sort of happy ending. But yeah, it just didn't feel like it. So is it better than the previous? Yes. Is it a great episode? I would say middle of the ground. Like, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
Not so good. It's just like, meh. It's really a meh episode. Like, it's the best you can say about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And all right. So with that in mind, how many chevrons do you give this one?
I'm hard pressed to give it more than 5. I would say 4, maybe. I'll stick with 4. It's not super bad. It's not the same. As I said, it's meh. And since 8 is the maximum and 0 is like 4. kind of. I don't really care enough about it to really think more about it.
I'm with you. All right, so I was curious if, talking through the episode, if you would sway my chevrons with this one.
I guess not.
You did not.
I would have expected that because I didn't.
Yeah.
I tried to explain some things and maybe make them sense, but ultimately I didn't care. And I didn't care.
And even with your explanations that were better than the episode, I was still having a hard time buying it. Yeah. And the most I can give this one is a 4.
Okay. So we're in agreement at least with the 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a quick look at your predictions, by the way,
for this episode.
So you said she will not implant a gold in SG-1 because something will happen that sends them off in another direction. Almost happened, but then Jack stole the gold. Tilk has brought together a larger coalition of Jaffa and that of Jaffa army against the gold. Not so much yet.
No, I mean,
not in this episode.
The spirit was there,
but
it didn't happen.
This Jaffa alliance will come to the rescue of SG-1. Can you call the 3-4 people as Jaffa alliance?
They didn't. I mean, they came to assist with the rescue.
Yeah, and so there's no Jaffa Earth alliance. And Tilk will be back in SG-1. I mean, we haven't seen it, but I would say safe.
But we know.
Safe bet.
Okay. My prediction for that is next episode, Tilk is back on the team and there's no explanation.
Exactly. I think so. Like, it's just there. It's just no talk about it. Yeah. Yeah. So I
had like ideas that fit in with things that happened, but I got how they happened and what the implications were wrong.
Yeah, at least, I mean, not for this episode. I mean, we'll see if some of them turn out to be correct. I mean, you had some predictions also for the rest of the season. So, but it could still be that some of the stuff you thought would happen in the first episode simply happened later.
It could be. Yeah. Still bummed about Hathor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even care so much about that. I care so little about this episode that I'm not even bummed about Hathor, to be honest. I'm like, whatever.
there's a couple things in the episode where I feel like I have a reaction to that that I need to get over myself for them. The first one is Hathor. But then I like that Tilk gets to do leadership things and he gets to have his monologue.
Yeah.
I like that we get to see this new little ship that I hope we see more of, that they can fly through a Stargate. Because seriously, after seeing that, I can see where there's so much potential with what they do with like having a little craft that they can fly through and do other things with in different locations.
Yeah.
So that, that could be fun. Excuse me, which does contradict something that I said during our predictions, which is this isn't going to be a show where they do spaceship things and space things, but I mean, really.
I would still not call that a spaceship. I mean, it travels through the gate still. So I think it's still in the spirit of, like, Stargate.
Okay.
I mean, we had Death Gliders before. So it's like, we actually have Death Gliders and spaceships because the world have them. And we've been on spaceships. But your prediction is still, like, I would still hold because this is not a spaceship. I don't even know if it goes into space, but it definitely travels through the gate.
Oh, that's a good point. We've only seen it fly in the air on two planets.
I would assume so, since it's a prototype Death Glider type of thing, that it probably can go up to their spaceships. I would assume so. But the purpose of it is to go through Stargates, very clearly. Or one of the reasons why it is how it is that it should go through Stargates.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could have those and just go to other planets and fly around. Still going through the gate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. we'll can see. Accept that. Yeah. We'll I see. Hope next episode is better. I'm assuming it will be simply because we came into the season on a weak note, just like we left the last season. Mm-hmm. And the show goes for 10 seasons total.
Yes.
So we can't have it continue to be disappointing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, this is the middle of the four seasons that had been ordered. So maybe it's okay. I mean, they knew, let's say, reasonably well that they would have two more seasons. I mean, mm-hmm. it can still happen. Next episode is Seth. And it is written again by Jonathan Glasner. So any ideas what this could be about, Seth?
All right, here's my prediction. Mm-hmm. Seth sure seems like they're I'm making a bold assumption. They're using Seth in the context of it's a person's name.
Okay.
So we're going to have a person named Seth that they encounter, and so far this is like real low hanging fruit.
That's definitely a low hanging fruit, yes.
So the question is, what role does this Seth play? Mm-hmm. And so here's my prediction. Mm-hmm. Seth is going to be someone that they encounter who's had an experience with a Goa'uld that becomes instrumental in whatever that they have to do in the episode to resolve their predicament.
Okay. Keep that in mind, what you just said, and we'll see what you think after you've watched it. Yeah. Okay. It was a very interesting prediction when you know what the episode is about. So, but I'm not going to tell you which way.
All right.
Keep that in mind when you watch it.
So, knowing me, after I watch the episode, I will probably laugh at my own prediction. But don't tell me if that's true.
I'll not tell you. Good. Okay. All right. Should we close the gate?
So, we should close the gate.
Should we blow up the generator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's put the C4 on a timer, close the iris so it blows up after the iris is closed.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Patrice, please tell people where they can find you.
Okay. I'm here on the British Tech Network with you every week. Big show, Mac show, almost every week when I'm traveling or not. Everything I do is on my website, thepatrice.com. That's, all the social media links, the podcasts, projects, all of that good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, how about you, Jeff?
When I'm not lamenting the loss of a ghoul that I thought had so much potential, I'll get over it. I'm on social media, Jay Gamut, pretty much everywhere, and most of my stuff though you'll find on like Instagram and Pixel Fed and Blue Sky. Then just a couple of the many shows that I'm on. Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS and the Mac Show on the British Tech Network. With you, Patrice. Yeah.
Very nice.
People can also get a hold of us if they want. Our email address is hello@retrorewatch.com. We're on Blue Sky as retrorewatch.com and Mastodon retrorewatch@techhangout.social.
Correct.
Yeah. So with that, our iris is closed. We've successfully made it into season 3. And the way I see it, this is a positive outlook because from here we can only go up.
You're sure about that?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking positive.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Patrice, thanks for putting up with me with my dysfunctions about this episode. And I'm looking forward to watching Seth and then letting you potentially ridicule me for my prediction.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, bye everyone, and we'll see you next time.